Hello and welcome to The Tips, a betting preview podcast from the DP World Tour. I'm your host, Ollie Silverton, and as usual, I'm joined by our expert guests as we look ahead to the Commercial Bank Qatar Masters from Doha Golf Club. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. Yes, that's right. We've got some expert tipsters, golf genii joining me this morning. We have Tom Jacobs, freelance golf writer and podcaster as well on Lost for Words, and Matt Cooper, golf writer and just intrepid explorer, storyteller, whatever you want, he's done it. And we'll probably hear some more about a weird time he met someone in Doha a bit later. But before then, gents, let's do a little recap on last week, because we had a double event and we've only got one this week, so we can dive a little bit deeper into it, starting in Andalusia, the Masters there. Now, Steve Bamford made his debut here, and what a debut it was. Got very close, managed to admit. It looked like it was done after, not done, but nearly done after 67, 68 holes. It wasn't, was it, Tom Jacobs? You were on him as well.
No, it was one of those things where the three-shot lead that he had really early felt a bit false, right? Like, that was more to do with people around him rather than what he was doing. And interestingly, like, in commentary, they were sort of saying how relaxed he was, and I felt the complete opposite. He looked quite nervous to me and looked like he was going to vomit at any point. And then he hit that, what looked like a brilliant shot into the par five, setting up an eagle chance, and it kind of transfers that he actually thinned it. And look, I think every golfer has to go through that kind of experience. He's still just 25. He's been playing on both tours. The real appeal to me was that he was playing so well on the PGA Tour consistently that when he came back to the DP World Tour, I thought he could really give it a go, and he did. And look, when you get beat by Adrian Meronk, there's not too much to complain about. I think Adrian Meronk's a fantastic golfer. He's now got three wins on the season, and I think he's used the fuel of missing out on that Ryder Cup pick to great effect. And maybe it just took a couple of weeks out further to kind of get over that before it might have just been too much. So, yeah, look, it was a good final round. Great viewership, and Big results for someone like Chase Hannah, someone that's keeping their card. John Monco, who looks like he should keep his card as well. So a really good final round, had it all. Unfortunately, just didn't get over the line with Schmidt.
Yeah, lots of great storylines around there. Richard Mansell's another one, isn't there? We've seen him just, yeah, continuing his way through the season. Now, what about yourself, Matt Cooper? You've normally got something good on the Polishman that is Adrian Meronk. And how did your picks go as well?
Yeah, I wasn't quite as badly off as those who were on Matty Schmidt. I was on Adrian Ategi, so I thought he could put up a good strong defence, and he kind of did, but just for sort of 54 holes. I think his final round looked a bit iffy. Never quite got into it, so it was a bit disappointing. But yeah, you're right, Adrian Meronk. Yeah, I've chatted a bit about him before, and I met the Golf Channel guy from Poland at the Ryder Cup, and he was a little bit disappointed. He'd made the big effort to book it out, get to the Ryder Cup for the first time. Was really excited, had never been to a big event. And when he booked it, of course, he was highly hopeful that Adrian Meronk could actually be there. But he was actually very kind of mature about it, a bit like Meronk himself. He come to terms with the fact that, you know, the decision had been made, and he just had to deal with it. What struck me last week again was the fact that I just keep going back to June last year. This is a genuine true story. I've got a Polish friend, and I said to her, oh, you know, Poland's got one of the biggest sort of up and coming golfers in the world. And she looked at me with this sort of classical European disdain and just sort of went, Poland golfer. that's not a story. And literally every sort of month after that, I've been updating her with the latest brilliance that Meronk has done. It's been like, oh yeah, he won in Ireland this week. Yeah, yeah, he's just become the first Polish pole to play in the Open. Oh yeah, he just won the Australian Open. He's probably going to play in the Ryder Cup. And it's been a whole year of just telling her these things. And slowly, it's been fantastic, because I've begun to realize that as I've been telling her this, she's been saying, oh yeah, actually, I've heard that people back home know about this guy as well. So it's actually, as she's gone from thinking the idea of a Polish golfer is literally the most absurd thing she's ever heard, she now gets it. And I think the same thing's happened back in Poland. So that's pretty impressive.
Love that. I like two parts of that. One, that you had to preface it with a genuinely true story. So I don't know what the other stories that you've thrown before have been, but this one is genuinely true. And the second one, I've also found that when you talk to some people who don't quite get golf, they're like, almost like, oh, that's cute. He's doing well, is it? And you're like, he won 1.1 million euros this week. You're like, oh, did he? Like, it changes it entirely when you put it into context. But that's great. And he's going from strength to strength. And rarely the sort of other tour was finished beforehand because, of course, it was in Japan, Zozo Championship. And Tom Jacobs, I mean, one, who you're on, and two, how impressed by Colin Morikawa. That's, we haven't seen that from him in a little while, it's fair to say. It was a ball striking clinic, really.
Yeah, I suppose we'll focus more on Colin Morikawa than my picks last week in the Zozo. There wasn't too much to report on that. I think Joel Damon and people like that were probably the closest for me. But Colin Morikawa is an interesting one because he feels like he's been in a drought, but it's only because of how brilliant he is. And I'm sure that's what a lot of people will point to. But I think I read that like Ben Coley was talking about, like, wasn't he like level par at the weekend and then shot 14 under and finished that way? And look, he's an incredible golfer and he just likes to remind us every now and then that that's how good he is. And it's tough because you don't see as much of it unless you're, you know, all over the time zones and happy to get, I'm sure, like you, Ollie, you're well travelled and probably up in Japan's time at some point. But I just find it amazing that he can go on a tear like that out of nowhere. I think he's been pretty consistent all year, but not shown the signs of winning as he did there. So great to have a player like that win, I think is the most important thing. And he will now want to build and look for another major championship next year. I don't think that's, you know, out of reach. So yeah, it's always good to see the best golfers in the world do what they do best. So really, really impressed by Colin Morikawa. And look, I think that there was a couple of players out there that are a bit green in contention and kind of fell away as well. So lots to report kind of into the next year and to golfers like Justin Sir and Bo Hostler and people like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Eric Cole was floating around as well. Some good players up there. And you say, very impressive with the time zones. He's been in Rome. He's gone back to America. He's gone there. Matt, they have a fair bit of this on the PGA Tour where they dive around different countries, which is great to showcase the game and different areas. Do you get into them just as much as you would as sort of, it's not always rinse and repeat, very sort of low scoring, you know, 25 under birdie fest, but it is a different sort of prospect. Do you enjoy them quite a lot?
Yeah, I actually miss a lot of the, it used to be so much Asian golf on the European, on the DP World Tour. And I used to really, really enjoy that, waking up and finding out what had happened. I tell you a result I thought was quite impressive last week. It was like a continuing of the story of Ryo Hisatsune, who won the Open de France. He actually saved me last week with his top 10. I'd gone with that with him, and he just sort of cozied his way into that top 10. But it's another step forward for him. He's only 21 years old. And he's doing a lot of good stuff, and he looks like he's a guy heading in the right direction. So Japanese golf looks like it's found another decent player. And yeah, I just think it's really nice when both tours stretch out into the east, and I wish it happened more, really.
Yeah, you know, I really enjoyed like the CJ Cup and things like that we've had in the past. It's a great part of the world for golf, isn't it? And you get these different kind of tests that you don't see, like what he said on the PGA Tour. And I think my favourite kind of wrinkle, I guess, from the event was the Morikawa-Horikawa start. I was actually on Horikawa for first round leader at like 250-1, so unfortunately he finished second. But even he like put something out on Instagram thinking that he was the leader and then realised it was actually Morikawa rather than Horikawa. So that was a great story from the Zozo Championship. But it's good. I think one of the things I really liked about it was just how well the Japanese contingent played and some of the ones that you wouldn't necessarily expect it from. Like, I think people would obviously expect Matsuyama to play well, but to see like Ryo Ishikawa and Ryo Hisatsune play so well is really good to see. So look, they're trying to lock up PGA Tour cards again. There's no secret to it. So good to see.
Yeah, and they absolutely love their golf out there. Those are some of the pictures, but a few of them bring out little step ladders if they're a bit shorter onto the course, that they were like three or four steps of the crowd so they could get above second, third tier, which I'd love to see someone try and get that through security at any of the open venues. But yeah, it was great viewing all around. And well, it's time this week to look at over at Qatar. So we're going not quite as far east, but definitely still east as we preview the Commercial Bank Qatar Masters. Yes, that's right. We are back in Doha and it's Ewan Ferguson to defend his title. Interestingly, it's 19 months on from the start of his first DP World Tour title. And that's exactly where I'm going to start with you, Matt, because it's changed from its usual March slot. And I wonder, for me, you are the king of weather. If it's altitude, you've got it, everything. And Doha is windy. Like we've even had it maybe 10 years ago or so. It was reduced to 54 holes because of the extreme winds. How much of a deep dive have you done into the weather and how much will this change in the calendar affect sort of the preview and what we're looking for?
Well, the digging that I've done has more or less come up with the idea that it's not going to be a massive amount of difference. I don't know if, as Tom, have you discovered much? It's, yeah, which kind of reminds me of having just spent 3 weeks in the Mediterranean for the Solheim Cup and the Ryder Cup. I'm very English, and I the seasons and different weather is something I cling to. 3 weeks of blue sky and 70 degrees temperatures left me bereft of hope. It's like I always remember that Perth, Western Australia, is possibly the most depressing place I've ever been in my life because I needed a cloud. I just needed a cloud. It's the idea of living 12 months in the same weather just did my head in. And I tend to suspect that the Middle East is the same, given what I've had a little dig on. But you're quite right. In many ways, Doha is a little bit different to the other Middle East courses that that the tour has variously been up against. In that, it is a little bit windier, which is not to say that the others don't get wind; they do. But it seems to play as a bigger factor here. I remember I chatted to Paul Laurie about this a few years ago because he's a two-time winner there, and as I'm sure Tom will acknowledge as well, this is a tournament that has favoured people who've got very good records in the Open. You've got people who've won the Open, and also you've got people like Adam Scott, Sergio Garcia, Thomas Bjorn, Chris Wood. They've all won here, and they've all been real nearly men in the Open, as well as the likes of Ernie Els, who've actually won it. And I said to him, you know, how does this work? You know, you've got a resort course in the middle of the Middle East, in the desert. How is it similar to the seaside of Great Britain? And he just said, first of all, ball control in the wind is a very important factor. And then the second bit that I thought was slightly more interesting was he said some of these holes need you to run the ball in rather than actually land it on the greens. And I think that's kind of like a sort of settler that it makes sense that good links performers perform well here. I've also got a little factor this week that I quite like, which is I think actually people who've got a good record at the Earth course that hosts the DP World Tour, got Alvaro Quiroz, Robert Carlsen, Henrik Stenson have all done the double. Brandon Grace, Sergio Garcia are among those who've got good results. There's a couple of winners here who've got very poor records there. So I'm not totally swayed by that. You know, like Eddie Pepperell has always struggled at the Earth course, so did Chris Wood. But there is some sort of link that's going on there. I think it's always one that I've really, really enjoyed. Junkun Wang is still one of my favourite wins, a bit of a strange one. But I always remember his chipping was very much chip and run when he won there. And again, that's very links-like.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, it was a playoff, wasn't it? I think against Lagergren and Jacques Van Zyl, he got it done. And the one thing, so if we've looked at weather there, one thing people need to know and remember, which it can slip under radar, Tom Jacobs, is it did move briefly for a couple of years. So it's a good time to look at the course because obviously it's back at Doha Golf Club. But this is where Ewan Ferguson beat Chase Hanna last year, and he did well last week, as mentioned. But we did have a couple of years at Education City Golf Club as well. So what do we need to know about the course itself when we're making our bets?
Yeah, I think Matt kind of covered the main aspects of it, which I think is the weather. Like, that is going to be the biggest challenge. If that doesn't get up, I think there's going to be a fairly low scoring affair, kind of 15 or 16 under. Pretty average size fairways, but I think unlike some of the other Middle Eastern courses, the rough's not very penal, so that's why we kind of get the scores that we do. So it's not a case of just hit it and hope. But I think that's kind of why you get the players that you do in the crossover with the Open Championship and even the Dunhill Links and places like that as well, because you can get a little bit more freedom off the tee. I know with the Open, you kind of get some funny lies and some wispy lies, but not so much here. But I think for me, it is just a case of you don't have to be long, which used to be the case. It used to be the case you had to hit it kind of the furthest to contend, whereas now the stats don't suggest you do. But I do think it's helpful to have that kind of power, and you can harness it in any way where you see. So whilst Ferguson was kind of up against it and in the tough conditions last year, and I don't think we're going to see that this time around, I think one of the pleasing things about this, and I guess people are into buy rhythms and things like that, that actually this following back-to-back Spanish events is kind of really important, because Spanish players do play really well here. We've obviously seen those play well over the last fortnight, and also South Africans have played so well in Spain and then so well here. So there could be a kind of good movement in the schedule for the players that did enjoy those kind of Spanish tests and South African tests earlier in the year. So all in all, I think it's just a test that just requires enough good approaches to set up the putts that you need to make. I think that there's not necessarily one factor that's going to stand out, but I think if it is, it's going to be just an all-round tee to green game.
Okay, great. And at the top, I mentioned 10 years ago, I was one out. It was 11 years ago where it got reduced to 54 holes because of the wind. And that was won by Paul Laurie, who by 4 shots ahead of Peter Hansen and Jason Day. Now, I think it's story time with Uncle Matthew. There was some sort of encounter you had with Paul Laurie, was it, or around him in Doha?
Well, it's not so much that. I chatted to him about this because I've always been very, very intrigued. His first win at Doha came in 1999. Now, plenty of golf fans will be quite well aware that in 1999, Paul Laurie did something quite special because he won the Open. So I think we've all got quite good memories of the fact that it was Carnoustie that he won it. It was Carnoustie that year. John van der Velde was leading. Paul Laurie chased him down. He was superb in the final round. Van der Velde had a big cock up on the 18th hole. Everybody knows quite a lot about that. Everybody also kind of knows that Paul Laurie won in Qatar earlier in the year. But I went digging a couple of years ago and was absolutely staggered to discover that when he won in Qatar, he had a really big lead, and the man that was chasing him was Jean Van der Velde. And like nobody ever talks about this. This is just absolutely bizarre. So I went chasing with Paul Laurie. First of all, I went to his autobiography, and there's no mention of the fact that earlier in the year he had actually had Jean Van der Velde chasing him when he had a big lead going down the final hole. And so I actually went and found Paul Laurie and got chatting to him about it. And first of all, he sort of says, "Oh yeah, no one ever remembers that." And I was like thinking, "You don't remember it? Never mind, no one else remembers it." And the comparison between these two things was so similar, it was almost eerie. So Paul Laurie's big round in the Open came in the final round, but in actual fact, in Qatar, it came in the third round. So he was one of only 11 players to break 70. He shot 67, which was the record low of the day. And that gave him a 5-shot lead going into the final round. And he built that up to 7 shots going to the 18th. Now, he had actually said on the Saturday, Jean Van der Velde had said on the Saturday night, it's going to do something strange to happen for Paul not to win this, but I've seen odd things happen. Now, when you consider what happened 6 months later, that is really, really weird that Jean Van der Velde was thinking that. And then Paul Laurie actually said that in the middle of the round, he said to himself, something really weird's got to happen if I'm not going to win this. But he knew something weird could happen, because 5 weeks before that, he'd played in, and this is a very weird event, the North East of Scotland Winter Alliance. Amazing warm-up tournament for a round of golf in the Middle East. He'd played in this and he had got a 10 on the final hole. He'd put 3 out of bounds. So Paul Laurie had this bizarre knowledge that the last hole, everything could go pear-shaped. It didn't for him in Qatar, but he went on to win. And I'm just fascinated to think what was going on in the subconscious of those two players. In July, in Carnoustie, Paul Laurie is chasing Jean Van der Velde, and he knows that he's beaten Jean Van der Velde down the stretch early that year. But even more intriguing is Jean Van der Velde is there. He knows that Paul Laurie's been talking about how something terrible can happen on the 18th hole. He might not be thinking it in his conscious mind, but he knows that in his subconscious mind, that's been talked about early that year. And he also knows that Paul Laurie has beaten him, and Paul Laurie's up there on the leaderboard as Jean Van der Velde's playing that final hole. Those sort of weird things. I'm astonished that we don't know more about that weird tale. It's like the prologue to the 1999 Carnoustie.
Yeah, I mean, now we're spreading the word. This is all part of the spin-off podcast we spoke about in that off-season we have, which is about 48 hours. We're going to do a few records. That is excellent. Just before we get into the tips, because you just sparked me there, I think of just Scottish golfers. There is an underlying sort of storyline going here, Tom Jacobs, where it's the last regular season event for people you know, to really secure their card. And I wonder how much of that plays into your thinking with betting, because I think every year we hear a story, don't we? We're like, oh, he had to hold it, Mr. One Foot, it was all of this. And there are a few quite big names there in Scott Jameson, Mark Warren, who are right and around the, I think Axelson has the magic spot right now, but he's missed some cuts, and Paratore winners all outside it. So before, without telling us any of your picks, do you think that actually plays a big part? And do you think we might see a fair bit of movement around the bubble?
I think come Sunday, we'll see a lot of it. In terms of whether it plays a part in me, I've decided to draw the hard line of no. And the only reason being is I don't want to try and pre-guess how people are kind of feeling. I think when it comes to kind of in-running bets and things like that, if people do those, like if it's a Saturday afternoon and one of your players, like a Mark Warren or Scott Chambers, anyone like that, is kind of on the bubble, I think it'd be really important to kind of consider the fact they've got not only their playing rights to play for, but also try and win the tournament. I think that can be a bit of a double-edged sword and actually be a bit of a negative factor sometimes. Some people play really good with it. But I think for me, it's one that I've kind of gone against. Now, if you look at the people that are playing for the top 10 PGA Tour cards going forward, like that's going to be a really big motivation for some people that maybe this time of the season would have a break. Like a Matthew Pavon, for example, is in that kind of mix right now. And he could go and get a card. I mean, Juuse Lauesen and Marcel Siem have got the last two at the moment, Thorbjørn Andersen as well. That could be a really big factor going on, that something, a wrinkle that we've not really had in the past. So that's a long way of saying, no, I don't factor it in, but I do think it will be important going on as the weekend advances and one to keep an eye on in running.
Perfect. Okay, well, let's get into it now. Quick look at the top of the market, and wow, it is competitive and as close as you like, really. I mean, I look at everyone, seems to be 20 to 1, which very rare, no one's in the teens for leading. But we got Jordan Smith, Alex Bjork, Thorbjørn Andersen. You can even get Aaron Rye and Rasmus Højgaard all at 20s. Højgaard can get as high as 25s and Aaron Rye. Then McIntyre at 30s, along with Roman Langask. So, I mean, it's not much between them. Let's come to you first, Matt, with your opening pick, and then Tom, just roll straight off the bat.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple of Englishmen there, Aaron Rye and Jordan Smith. Ollie, I'm going to go with another one, Matt Wallace. I think he's, if for a fellow who's had a win on the PGA Tour this year, admittedly an opposite field event, but he's in a nice trot of form. I think the fact we can get 30 to 1 about him is quite nice. And that victory that he did have, it was at Corrales Punta Cana, blustery seaside track, a little bit like this. And he's sort of got some nice form on blustery tracks. His first win on the DP World Tour came at Morgado in the Open to Portugal. He was sixth in the Dunhill Links a couple of weeks ago. He's finished second at Hillside and also second at Fairmont St Andrews. So the sort of the link sort of thing ticks there. He's got a very good record at the Middle East. He won a couple of tournaments there on the third tier when he was making his very rapid progress to the top of the game. He's also finished second at Emirates and at the Fire Course at Jumeirah. And also he's finished second at Earth, because I was mentioning how that's quite a nice pointer. So he get the Earth, the links, blustery, he ticks there. He's played the course once, and he did so when he was in a bit of poor form in the sort of winter of 2019, and he finished 19th there. That was his best result for a while, and he really kicked it off that. He won in his next start at the Indian Open. It was the first of three wins in 2019. So he doesn't have great memories, but goodish memories of the course. And then adding to the form and adding the fact that he's got lots of wins, he's also got lots of seconds and thirds, so he gets himself into contention. And the last time he was up against a field like this, at a course like this, I would argue was probably the Czech Masters at Albatross, and he finished second. So I kind of like all of that, and I think 30 to 1, I'd have him a bit shorter than that. 30 to 1's fine for me.
Yeah, great. And we know he'll be very happy because he does listen. So you're keeping someone on side there. Okay, Tom Jacobs, who are you opening up with?
Yeah, so for me, it is Thorbjørn Andersen. He's been mentioned there previously. I just think he's the most rock solid at the top. And it's a seven-time DP World Tour winner, someone that's won in back-to-back years to remind us of how good he was. When you look at where else he's won, the Sicilian Open, gets a little bit windy there. Perth, I'm sure there's some wind in the sand at times. And then obviously he's won the Dunhill Links ahead of Brooks Koepka. So he's got a really good sort of CV of playing in windy conditions. Then you come over to his course record here, and he missed the cut and then finished 59th in that renewal you spoke about, where it produced a 54 holes, Ollie. But then he went 22nd on his third start, where he was actually fifth after 36 holes. And then he's got third, second, and 12th since then at Doha. So his form at the golf course is you know, one of the best in this field, without the win, of course. And then the current form is just great. He's just playing really solidly. And when you listen in commentary, sometimes they do throw out these stats and the fact that he was leading greens in regulation for the week. And that's not the, you know, that's not the first time this season. He's been excellent with his irons for the majority of the season. So his stroke screen approach and tee screen game is great right now. I think he's, you know, a serial winner as confirmed by his CV, seven wins in that time. So yeah, I think of the 20-1 group, I think Ollison is the standout for me. And I love what he does in the Middle East. I love the wins that he's got so far. He's even been second in Mauritius, which I think is pointed to at times as well. So everything that he's done in the past, plus what he's doing right now with his ball striking, suggests that it could be another big week for Thorbjørn Ollison.
Oh, you muted yourself.
Sorry, I don't know how I did that. Yeah, it's my second pick is a big price, but not as big as he initially opened. This guy opened at 150-1, and I was absolutely gobsmacked at that. Unfortunately, I got a bit of it, but I still think he's a nice price at 70-1. Now, he's not a guy that has won yet at this level, but a Frenchman, which is what he is, who also has never won at this level, did recently win, and my man was one of the first people onto the green to celebrate with him. And that man was Mathieu Pavon, and my man is Mike Lorenzo Vera. And I just think this could be the moment for Lorenzo Vera. You were mentioning earlier, Ollie, that people who are on the cusp of securing their card might have a big week this week. Now, you could argue that he is that man. I mean, in theory, he could be overtaken. In reality, it would take something quite remarkable. I've kind of had a little fiddle. I think it needs about five or six people to finish in the top 25 who are behind him. I don't think that's likely to happen. So he's the sort of person who's going to have a few butterflies in the stomach, but it might be sort of sufficient to sort of just like keep him on edge. And he ought to be fairly confident coming to this golf course. He's played it six times, and the last five times he's made the cut. He was fourth when one shot outside the playoff in 2017, 10th a year later, third in 2019. He hasn't played it since, partly because it went to Education City, but he didn't play the last time it was here when Ewan Ferguson won. But he really likes blustery golf courses. He comes from the Atlantic coast in France and was brought up playing golf on a blustery golf course. His win that got him onto the European Tour in the first place was at San Domenico in Italy. I was fortunate to have been to a couple of those, and that is a blustery golf course by the sea. And it has a very similar sort of setup to Doha. And Tom was mentioning Fujura where and the Sicilian Open that Torbjörn Olsson's done well at. The closest Mike Lorenzo Vera has ever come to a win was when he was in the playoff to win that and he was denied in extra holes. So I like all of that. And also he's ninth in Madrid. And then he shot a 65 in round three last week, which got him into the weekend and pretty much secured his card. So I think he can sort of spin off this week and hopefully has nice memories of Mathieu Pavon. I always have a really big soft spot for Mike Lorenzo Vera. I've always had a soft spot for people who change their haircuts quite a lot. And fans of Lorenzo Vera, and he's been around on tour for a long time now. He's gone from a thick sort of mop of sort of Supergrass style hair. He looked like the drummer out of Supergrass for a long while. Then he sort of went into that sort of very sort of elegant quiff that looked quite greased with a bit of moustache thing, but made him look like a sort of slightly dodgy mayor from a sort of tin pot dictatorship in sort of Central America or something. Now he's gone for a slightly more restrained look. But in addition to that, I also like the fact that he's always been a very generous supporter of his compatriots and his friends. I was at the Challenge Tour Grand Final in Dubai when the beautifully named Jerome Lando Casanova won. And it all came down to the fact, could Ollie Farr hole out from the fairway on the 18th hole? He didn't. And then I managed to get this accidentally brilliant photograph of Lorenzo Vera giving Lando Casanova a hug. And probably the two longest names in the same photograph. But the sort of joy that Lorenzo Vera had for his friend getting his tour card was absolutely fantastic. And I've never forgotten it. And I hope that he's the one getting the hugs this week.
Nice. I mean, I do love a doppelganger. And we, a few of us, was all used to have him down as the Musk D'Artagnan or one of those when it was the little moustache rolled over. That's so maybe he can be the third musketeer if we've got Casanova and Pavon. He's just, you know, rolling his way on the back of it.
Yes.
Love it. Okay. Tom, we're going to get one from you and then we're going to play a little game, your final main outright of Who Am I before we get your bonus pick. So who have we got rounding this off?
Yeah, so this was someone I tried to pick before and he pulled out the last time we tried to play him. But it's Sean Crocker, who I still think is actually a reasonably good price in the market. He's still 90-1. And look, he was fourth in strokes gained approach last week, sixth in tee to green. He made both of his cuts in Spain, 20th and 43rd, which, you know, in isolation is not great, but he's definitely on the right track. And look, he's played here before, and actually on his debut, he was second going into Sunday, but finished 28th due to a bit of a blow-up. Now, that's obviously a concern that he blew up on the Sunday, but he also hadn't won yet, whereas he's now a Hero Open winner. I just think Sean Crocker's got plenty to offer. I think he's someone that's looking for a fast track back to America and playing on the PGA Tour, but I think there's just so much from him still to come, and when someone like him shows their ball striking ability the week before, I always look at them for the following week, and it just so happens it marries up to be a good golf course for him as well. That little bit of extra room off the tee could be beneficial. I think he'll like the conditions if it does get a little bit windy. He's shown that in the past. So I think Sean Crocker's got all the tools to be successful this week, and someone that I still don't really know if we know the ceiling of Sean Crocker yet. I think there's still plenty to offer. So at nearly 100-1, I think he's a great chance here.
Perfect. Well, there you go. There are four names to start with. And we're going to have a quick game of Who Am I, and then we'll get four more from the gents. But yeah, it's time to put their knowledge to the test. Yeah, that's right. It's everyone's favourite part of the game, apart from when we pick winners. It's Who Am I? I pick who I think is going to go well this week. The gentlemen will try and guess in between at different stages. And the clues, in theory, should get easier. Now, before I do this, I am going to say I had two people I like this week. So at the end, I'm going to throw out a second one because I only get one go at this and everyone else gets loads. So I really, you know, I'm feeling like I'm on a bit of a tear right now. I think a week before last, I had the leader after 54 holes. Can't even remember who it is. But yeah, I feel like I'm on form. But let's get into this week's Who Am I? And I like to start with this one always because it just puts the cat amongst the pigeons. I have earned just under 2.5 million euros on the DP World Tour. Matt's the trademark Mac look to the skies, top left to top right. It's every time. And Tom,
go on, I'll have a guess because there's no penalty, is there? I'm going to go with Jeff Winter.
It's not Jeff Winter, but
I'll have a guess. Is it Nick Backham?
It's not Nick Backham, but enjoyable guesses. Okay, the next clue is my best results are third in South Africa, runner-up at the Alfred Dunhill, and a win in Germany. Tom Jacobs.
Is it Marcus Armitage?
Tom Jacobs. That's very good. Well done. Yes, it is Marcus Armitage. I think that's your first four-pointer out of it. So very good. The next clues were, I'm a proud Guinness World Record holder. I was going to throw that in because we've done a lot of those. Again, he's the one people really remember. Next one was, I was snapped by a photographer asking Tiger Woods for an autograph in Dubai, which was in his early days on tour. And finally, I'm widely regarded as one of the funniest, most popular characters in the sport. And he definitely is that. So yeah, it was between Marcus Armitage and someone for me who is the ultimate horses for courses player is Marcus Shinholt, who's his miscuts galore, but he's had three finishes in two thirds and loves the win. So, and it was at Hillside, wasn't he? He was phenomenal. So yeah, he was the other one. But well done, Tom Jacobs. That is fantastic. And just a reminder for you at home, if you enjoy a game but don't fancy a bet, then the Fancy Game on the DP World Tour website is the perfect place for you. You select six players for the week, compete against your friends, family, maybe a couple of these guys, some of our experts for bragging rights, and it's a really good time. So, get involved there. But well done, Tom. And let's roll straight back into your next two bonus picks for this week in Qatar.
So Matt's already mentioned this guy. And look, he's a lot easier to justify these days because he has just picked up the recent win. I think Matthew Pavon is someone that we should be keeping an eye on again this week. I think the fact that he bounced back from, well, not bounced back, continued his good form from a win and finishing ninth last week after a slow start suggests to me that Pavon can, you know, put together another win. He comes to a course where he's played reasonably well. He comes to a part of the world where he's played well in the past. And also, he's got that kind of correlative form. We talked about Mauritius Open, he's been second. Portugal Masters gets talked about a lot. He's been second there. He's been second at Scottish Open, sixth at the Dunhill Link. So there's a lot to like about Matthew Pavon. I just think he's the type of player that could go on and win quite quickly afterwards. So I think he's one to look at. Obviously, nearer the top of the market, around where Matt Wallace was with Matt's first pick. But I do think Matthew Pavon should be considered this week.
Yeah, my next one, it would be Adrianos. Ollie won't be surprised that I like him. I think he's a really good player. But I think this week he's got a fantastic record in the Middle East. He got a win there on the Challenge Tour. He's got three top 15s at Emirates, three top 20s at Abu Dhabi. He's been third at Royal Greens, three top 10s at the Earth Course. He was tied 14th on debut at Doha, and he was the joint first round leader. He had a round 365 last week when he was tied 19th. I think 81 is really big for him. And also, Ollie, you said Marcus Chinholt. I also liked Richard Mansell this week, also dabbled with Adrian Ategui, but in the end, I've gone with Matthew Jordan. We all know about his links record. He was 13th last week. He's got better and better as the weeks have gone on since he had his fantastic week at the Open. And he was fifth on debut at this golf course. And he was 54-hole joint leader. So you can get 66-1 about him. So that's my pair. And I'll flip it back to you, Tom, because I think I might have cut you off with your second one.
No, absolutely not. The final one for me, Will Besseling, who... Look, I think I'll preface this by saying that he doesn't get in contention an awful lot, but he's threatened to do it, you know, over his last five of six events or so. You go back to August at the Czech Masters, he was fourth after 54 holes and finished 14th. And then the last 2 weeks in Spain, he's been second after round one and round two at the Open de España, finishing 35th. And then last week, he was fourth after round one at the Andalusia Masters and 10th going into the final round before finishing 26th. So to me, that kind of suggests that he's capable of scoring at the moment. And also, I just like seeing that where someone's put together two or three rounds and maybe been slightly missed in the market. Now, I think with Will Besseling, as someone that doesn't finish second, third, fourth too often and hasn't won on DP World Tour, we have to kind of say that he's not overpriced. But I do think he's someone that's in better form than the numbers suggest. And there's been a fair few missed cuts in there at the time. But when he has made the weekend, he seems to either start really fast or pick out over the weekend. So maybe it's one of those ones where you pick him up as a first-round leader or something like that as well. But I think Will Besseling is someone that could get himself in the mix. 21st here on debut last year, so pretty solid there as well.
Brilliant. Some great names there. I mean, Adrianos, I think, you know, not that he ever owes the pod a bit, but he's had a few mentions through the last few months. On stark contrast, we've got Besseling, big bad Bill Besseling, as I call him, who... got first time mention. So go on the Dutchman overall, but some great stuff there and plenty of names, which I'll quickly recap now before saying bye to the guys. Yes, time now for the recap. And we'll start with Matt Cooper's picks. His main selections for Qatar are Matt Wallace and Frenchman Mike Lorenzo Vera. And then he threw in the additional names of Adrianos and Matty Jordan. And Tom Jacobs then went for Thorbjørn Olesen and Sean Crocker as his main selections, with Mathieu Pavon and Will Besseling rounding it off. Yes, there you go. Plenty of names in there. Lots of insight and information for you to digest. And that's it this week. So it's just a massive thank you for it's flown by with Matt Cooper and Tom Jacobs. But join us next week for the Challenge Tour Grand Final and the Worldwide Technologies Championship. And I just want, gents, from you, as you sign off, one name from the Challenge Tour who you think is going to be a real star, because I don't think you're on next week. Going ahead into the future, next year and further, what's a name we need to be looking out for? I'll start with you, Matt.
I think I'll go with the fellow who I met at the Open and thought he was absolutely fantastic. And he did me a big favour because he seemed very, very confident about the way his life and his golf was going. And I actually backed him the next week and he did win in Ireland. Brandon Robinson-Thompson. Fitting into the general trend these days that you need three names to play on the DP World Tour.
Absolutely right. Okay, thank you, Matt. You can find it at Matt Cooper Golf on Twitter. And Tom Jacobs, remind them where you can be found and who's going to be the name.
Yeah, so it's for me, it's Tom Jacobs 93 on the app, formerly known as Twitter, I guess. I'm going to cheat slightly. I'm going to go with someone that we know about that's coming back from the Challenge Tour, and that's Matteo Manassero. I'm really excited for him to be back at the top level. He's someone that I have really fond memories on. I watched him win at Wentworth when I bet him. And for me, like, this was a person that we thought was on a fast track to Ryder Cups, never made one, perhaps never will. But the fact that he's kind of pieced his game together to play as well as he had this season, to win a couple of times and really get himself into the mix, was really impressive. So we have him. I think if we're looking for someone just strictly from the Challenge Tour, Hugo Sassard is second in the rankings, the Frenchman, who's someone that could go on and play well. But I think we've been spoiled, I think, with the last couple of Challenge Tour seasons and graduates. And it's this year where I think we're getting some that are returned from previous seasons, Matteo Manassero, Andrea Pavan, Lorenzo Scalise. They're all, you know, three Italians. They're all inside the top 10 of the rankings. So it could be a year of people returning for their sort of second, third, fourth time round, as opposed to these dominant youngsters that come through. So really interesting to see. And that Challenge Tour Grand Final will definitely check out some good results.
Absolutely, it will. Well, thank you very much again, gentlemen. And for the listeners, enjoy the golf. Good luck with all of your picks this week. And we'll see you next time on The Tips.